from the sick bed for number 12. This is Brian.
And this is Dean. Welcome to the FrankBlack.net podcast. This episode, in honor of Frank Black beginning his acoustic solo tour throughout the United States and Canada, we will be playing exclusively live tracks, all live stuff. So those of you that have all the albums and, you know, want stuff that you haven't heard as much of, this is the podcast for you.
Yes, and later in this episode, we will be talking with Mr. Frank Black once again about the art of performing live and how he goes into picking his set lists and all sorts of interesting little live tidbits. So this is really a live-centric show, and we hope that you guys enjoy it. And we're going to get started with a song that is near and dear to my heart, and more specifically, a recording that is near and dear to my heart, because it is a recording from December 18th, 2004, which is the day I met Dean Katsiris.
Yes, I still have that day, you know, marked on my calendar with little hearts and things like that. So, an important day in my own history, if not FrankBlack.net history, since a bunch of us, besides Brian and myself, did meet there and chat with Frank Black backstage. It was a great time. And that was December 18th, 2004, over in New York City, Brian's stomping grounds at the Hammerstein Ballroom and the Late Show. They had two shows that night. And that was, their last show of what we thought might be the complete reunion tour. We might be seeing the last Pixies show ever. So it was a pretty big deal, very good show, and a very good song. Here it is, Caribou.
Thank you.
Live recording from December 1st, 2003, Frank Black and the Catholics at Shepherd's Bush in London, UK. That was Hermaphroditos, or as some people call it, Hermaphroditos is my name. On the Dog in the Sand packaging, it is listed both ways, so you can choose how you like it and say it that way. That was on the Final Catholic Store, unfortunately, as of now, and that's a particularly great show, and it was available briefly on hearitagain.net. You could find it floating around the internet, so check it out.
Yeah, I haven't heard that much from that show, so it was nice to hear it. I guess we're working backwards in time. We had a 2004 track, now a 2003, and now we're going to be playing you something that is timeless in that it doesn't have a time that it was recorded that we are aware of. Probably around the same time that Show Me Your Tears was recorded. As promised last week, it's the other alternate version of Nadine.
This is the version of Nadine that is most familiar to me in a live setting. I had seen Frank Black and the Catholics in 2002, in November of 2002, to be precise, and they played a version of Nadine that was much more similar to this than the recorded version. And right. I remember hearing the Show Me Your Tears version and being sort of taken aback at how little piano there was. So this version is very similar to the version of Nadine that I remember from my first time hearing it.
Well, and, that's interesting.
I, like Dean, prefer the album version to this version. However, I really love seeing the progression of a song and how it starts from one thing and turns into something completely different. So I've talked enough. Here is Nadine.
There goes Nadine, head and toe in black. Goes Nadine, head or toe in black. When I see Nadine, I want that. But she let me in underneath her clothes. But she let me in underneath her clothes. That girl got skin like a Nadine. Nadine, Nadine. There goes Nadine. Nadine, Nadine. There goes Nadine. Oh, I think that when she leaves, been cooking up some spells. Cause when she walks on by, you know I am going to smell. Has a big gray car, she could take me for a ride. She has a big gray car, she could take me for a ride. Maybe we'll park and I'll drive. There goes Nadine, Nadine, Nadine. There goes Nadine, Nadine, Nadine. Nadine, Nadine, Nadine.
That was a lot of fun, maybe even more fun than the final version, which, you know, the final one's a little bit more dark, I think, and this just kind of the piano lightens it up. It's fun. It's a nice alternate version, and you heard it here exclusively on the frankblack.net podcast, courtesy of Mr. Frank Black, and he is here with us now. Frank, as always, it's a pleasure to have you here on the podcast, and welcome. I wanted to ask you, today is August 1st, and you have your live tour through North America starting in about a week. So I guess the first question I have is something that goes back a little ways. I know when you played with the Catholics, there was no set list for that given night. You know, you would just call it out as you went. But I also know that you kind of developed a repertoire of 50 well-rehearsed songs, give or take. And I'm just wondering what goes into generating those set lists, you know, those songs that you decide you're going to play on any given tour.
I guess it's just sort of a whatever you can remember kind of a thing, you know. It's all a feel thing, I guess. I don't analyze it too much. Whatever just seems like it's going to be fun to play. I don't know. I put together the set list in a really lazy way. I might have records with songs on them that amount to a certain number, but some of those songs get rehearsed and then they get recorded. Some of those songs get written over a long period of time. But that's not the case for all of them. You know, some of them are written very quickly, very spontaneously, or they're written in a really kind of intense, kind of almost neurotic frenzy, where you're kind of lost in the world of this particular song that you're writing and maybe about to record, and maybe it's full of little eccentricities, maybe. For example, there's a song on Devil's Workshop, San Antonio, Texas, for example, or on the new record, If Your Poison Gets You, might be like that. If Your Poison Gets You, like, I think I could remember how to play that, but you know what? I wrote on a ukulele, and when I go on tour, I generally don't bring in a ukulele on stage, so it's kind of like... You know, I have to have it transposed to guitar, and that might be the kind of thing where that if I'm in a lazy enough mood, that might be the kind of thing that will say, well, I'm not going to do that song, you know, because I don't know how to play it, or I don't remember how to play it, or it's such a complicated little ditty that I don't even know how I came up with it, and it just seems really foreign to me. Not so much to listen to it, but to actually sit down and play it. Right. I remember the Catholics, we rehearsed up San Antonio, Texas one night for a tour. And it was such a tongue twister for our little brains to kind of get around. The chord changes were so fast, you know what I mean? They're just sort of like change, 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 change. And it was just kind of nutty. And we did learn it, but maybe not the kind of thing that we were like into doing every night. And so we just, it was easy to fall by the wayside, which is exactly what had happened. In a perfect world, I would have all my songs memorized, Bruce Springsteen supposedly does, ready to go at a moment's notice during a tour, but it's just too many couplets to remember.
Your most recent record is Fast Man, Raider Man. Are those songs more fresh in your memory than, say, something you wrote 15 years ago? Or is it simply a feel thing where today you feel like playing Big Red and tomorrow you may feel like playing Fitzgerald, and it's not because of a time frame, it's just more organic than that?
I didn't tour on Honeycomb, and I didn't tour yet on Fastman and Raider Man, so the only songs I've been playing live the last couple of years have been Pixies numbers. Right. And so actually Honeycomb and the current record, I don't have a lot of muscle memory regarding those songs, so I've got to work a bunch of them up, actually, because there is some expectation from audiences to hear some of that material anyway. So
is that what they can expect when you tour this fall?
I don't know yet, because I haven't done any rehearsals yet with the band, and right now my feeling is I've got lots of songs to choose from. I just kind of want to have a really great show, and it's not really so important for me to showcase my new album in some special way. I don't want to be like, okay, here's my Nashville stuff. I don't want to like play it up too much, you know what I mean? I want to play new songs. I mean, that's which is always a mistake, because people are like, we don't know this song. Play some stuff that we can sing along to. I mean, you know, I understand the audience's perspective, because I am in an audience member sometimes too. You know, when I go see somebody perform, I don't necessarily want to hear a bunch of stuff that I don't know. It's hard to pull off, you know what I mean? It's hard. It's not to say you couldn't pull it off. You know, you've really got to step up to the plate and really deliver if you're going to play people material that they're not familiar with and win them over. That's the only way you can kind of be fresh again. It's the only way you can be new again, is to play material that they haven't heard. I mean, maybe they still have some nostalgic association with you yourself, no matter what you're doing up there, but it's the closest you can come to kind of going back in time and starting over again, is to play material that people don't have any reference to. Because that's what it's like when you first start performing and you start a little band, and, you know, maybe you've got a record out on some little label somewhere, but the 50 people that are watching you on a Thursday night somewhere, they don't know who you are, really, or they don't know who your material is, and they're just checking you out. You get that feeling a little bit when you're opening up for somebody, you know, because you're playing for someone else's audience, and you can kind of go, well, no one here at this Pearl Jam show knows who I am, but I can play these 10 songs and try to win them over. The trouble with that situation is that when you're opening up for somebody, is that people have bought a ticket to see the headlining act. They don't really buy tickets to see the opening act. And so even if you do a great rendition of your material, they're still basically distracted by what is about to happen later, the headlining act. So that's not a situation that I love to be in, opening up for other acts. I like to do it for a few days or a week or two or something, but then after that, it's not very much fun. So as far as my next tour with this record, I'm playing with two guys from Nashville and one guy from my past, Eric Drew Feldman.
Oh, excellent.
And so it's just going to be a simple four-piece band. And
are you going to be calling yourself Shwarma?
No, no. I would love to, but Shwarma is a whole different thing. Yes, I just want to rock out. And when I say rock out, I don't necessarily mean be loud or aggressive, although it could take that shape. One wants to be impressive somehow, you know, and it's hard because sometimes you are and sometimes you're not, you know. And I wish I could just do it like all the time. I wish I could just be Tina Turner all the time, you know, but I don't know, you know. My dad once told me that he used to manage the restaurant next door to a nightclub called the Troubadour in West Hollywood. This is in the 60s. He used to go over there and drink or party with the bartenders over at the Troubadour, and he worked at a restaurant next door called Dantana's. It's this famous old Hollywood haunt. He walked into the room, and Bobby Darin was on stage. My father did not even care for Bobby Darin's music, per se. But Bobby Darin really had the audience in the palm of his hand. I mean, he walked into the room for completely some other purpose to, you know, whatever, borrow a case of vodka because they ran out or something next door, and walked in and was stuck there for the next 2 hours because he couldn't leave the room because Bobby Darin just had a grip on everybody in the room. You know, he said it was the best musical concert he'd ever seen in his whole life. So that's really saying something, I think. And as a performer, you want to be that good. You want to be like Bobby Darin at the Troubadour. You want to be like Elvis on the TV special or whatever. Pick a classic concert, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know.
How about the Pixies in Saskatoon? I don't think I've ever seen so many people so excited to see someone.
That was a nice little tour. We were going to warm up along the West Coast, and someone said, well, why don't you go to Canada? It'll be more obscure or something. It'll be more off the beaten path. And so, you know, we went to Regina and Saskatoon, and I would say that, gee, I'd never been to those places, but just ironically, I had been there a year and a half before, whatever, with the Catholics.
Yes.
And hit a lot of those places that I had never been to when the Catholics went. And when the Pixies went there, it was the beginning of our reunion tour. We were playing these old theaters. It was very much like we were a band the first time. You know, when we were a band the first time, yeah, sure, we had some success in a few countries and could play some big venues. But, you know, a lot of times we'd be in Davenport or someplace in Florida or someplace in the middle of wherever. We'd be playing at the local rundown theater or whatever, and it wouldn't necessarily be sold out, but it was kind of cool. That's what that reunion tour reminded me of in the beginning there, because we were sold out, but still we were just playing these kind of more lonely kind of cities, you know, in these kind of old theaters. And I really love playing theaters. I guess that's really what it's about, is there's different kinds of venues you can play, but really the theater is the ultimate.
There's something like it's a night out to it. I don't know about on your perspective.
But... yes, the architecture is at one with what's going on. It's designed for performance, whatever kind of performance it is. You know, so everyone in the audience can see you, and there are good sight lines, and while the sound might be a bit cavernous, especially for rock and roll, because it's kind of loud, especially nowadays, the last 20 years, it's gotten so loud, I suppose, that rock and roll in a theater, sometimes in a big cavernous theater, the sound can kind of get out of control. But still, having said that, it is designed for sound, and if you can get it right, theaters, they sound good, they look good, they feel good. It just has the right feeling. Obviously, if you play an airplane hangar or some grimy little cement box club or the new Kodak Dome or whatever, those kinds of places which are designed for making money, or they're designed for drinking, you know, if you go down to the club level, the bar level, they're just little places that are designed to sell beer and, you know, get rid of urine. It's just like a flow thing, but it's not really about a show or performance. And it's fun to go to clubs to see shows, but a theater is small enough that there's this certain intimacy with the audience and with the person on stage, but it's just big enough that it's an event. There's excitement in the air. And, yeah, theaters rule.
That was I've Seen Your Picture from KB Malmo, Sweden, March 2001. Particularly excellent concert. If there is a top five listing of Frank Black live shows, that would certainly be in there. And I've Seen Your Picture turns out to be the answer to the first question we asked in our trivia contest of podcast number 10. The question being,
what Frank Black song is about Walmart?
And I've Seen Your Picture, I think, refers specifically to the smiley face that he kept seeing all over the place when he was on tour. Just everywhere he looked, there's, you know the Walmart smiley.
I know it well.
Yes, you and many, many others. So that is the answer to question number one.
And now we're going to hear the answers, plural, to question number two. This was a three-part question, and we're going to be playing the songs a little bit out of order, but there's a good reason. Two of the recordings come from the same show, which was the Reading Festival on August 26th, 1994, in sunny England. After that, we'll be hearing a track from Palo Alto, California, March 3rd, 1995. So we're finally breaking free of this backwards chronological order we've been handling this podcast in so far. Enjoy. My mind is like an ocean.
all you see is violence. Well, then I make a plea, yeah, in their defense. Don't you know they speak by billion? And for what it is, hear what my theory is. Well, some gibberish, it is so serious.
First up, we heard the song that is about Iggy Pop, which is 10%er.
And then we heard Two Reelers, which is about the Three Stooges.
And then we heard At the End of the World, which is about John Candy. Now, a note here before we go any further. One of our podcast listeners misheard my mumbling New Jersey accent as saying John Kennedy instead of John Candy. And they sent us this interesting little fact that said that in an online chat with the publication of Music Today, Frank Black had revealed that both Thalassocracy and Pure Denizen of the Citizens Band were both about John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And that was a fact that neither Dean nor I knew. And although it's not correct, we thank you for that little piece of information.
Yes, yeah, bonus marks for that. What the heck? Not very often that someone comes up and says, hey, did you know this song was about that? And we haven't heard it, so good on you.
Because we're such intelligent people.
We are probably the most intelligent people in the world. And modest, of course.
Of course.
And how dare you think otherwise. Now,
I can say with no hyperbole that we are the smartest people in the world.
I can say without fear of hyperbole that we are a gazillion times smarter than the next smartest person. Gazillion. Look it up. And now, trivia fans, it's what you've all been waiting for. The answers to the rest of the trivia questions and the winner announced. Question number three, we made you dig back into previous podcasts and find Brian and my list of podcasting rules to success. And we are going to read them for you now. We asked for five, but we'll read all of them just so you know. These are important, guys, so take notes. Rule number one, insult your listeners.
Rule number two, don't bore your audience.
Rule number three, don't get bitter.
Rule number four, learn the difference between a dream and an acid trip.
Rule number five, get your facts straight before you do a podcast.
Rule number six, we need an editor.
Rule number seven, play the damn song already. So those were the seven rules that we had made of podcasting. We asked you for five. I think pretty much everyone got those correct.
And then question number four, we asked what was being chanted while I was entering the ring in podcast nine. And we did have one person get this correct,
and many,
which
many,
I'm shocked.
Yes, everyone got it wrong. There were some pretty funny answers, actually. I think someone said that the chanting was Tutu White when Brian entered the ring. I thought that was...
And another one was Tuesday Night.
And the other one was, yeah, Tuesday Night. Why they would be chanting Tuesday Night, I don't know. Maybe the fight was on a Tuesday or something. I guess
perhaps.
This podcast is coming out on a Tuesday, so maybe it was important to the future. But anyway,
touche.
Some funny answers. But the actual answer, I'll give you a listen here before I tell you. So here we go. So if you couldn't tell what they were saying there, it is cheat to win. And congratulations to Ian Beale for getting that particular question right. You were the only one. Unfortunately, you didn't get some of the other ones right, so you don't win. But I'm just kidding.
You got a gold star.
Gold
from
star.
Dean and Brian.
Yes, yes. It's in the mail. Brian's sending it. It's chopped out of your bathrobe, isn't it?
It's actually from the extra material from my bathrobe in case it needed to be, you know, let out at all.
Ah, well done. Well done. So anyway, the final question in the trivia contest was the distance in kilometers from Brian's home in Oakland, New Jersey to mine in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. And there were most of you guys got this right. Not sure how you did it. We used Google Earth to get a number, and it came out to, Brian?
2,740 kilometers.
Yes. And several of you got that right. Congratulations. Some of you gave us, I think, road distances. Someone mentioned that there's two Oaklands in New Jersey, which is something that neither Brian nor myself knew. There may be a different spelling or something involved, though.
There might be. There could just be two Oaklands. I know, for instance, there are two Washington townships in New Jersey. And there's no Brianville.
There is, well, yet, Brian.
Yeah.
You know, vote yes on 305. But anyway, 2,740 kilometers are what separate Brian and myself. And quite a few of you got that right again. Congratulations. So we had many entries, probably the most successful contest we've had so far. The prize, by the way, is Brian.
The prize for this trivia contest is a few different things. First of all, we have a copy of the two most recent and best books about the Pixies. The book Doolittle by Ben Cesario in the 33 and a Third series, and also the book Fool the World, An Oral History of the Pixies by Josh Frank and Karen Gans. On top of that, we're going to include two very rare DVDs of Frank Black performances, one from June 22nd, 1996, and one from the Reading Festival in 1994. And the winner is...
Dun, 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 dun. Suicide
Samurai.
All right. Suicide Samurai. Congratulations. Send us your mailing address. We will get that out to you as soon as we can.
And now coming up, we are going to hear a very special acoustic version of John the Revelator, which was recorded on August 24th, 2001 at the Lowlands Festival in Holland. But however, this was recorded before his actual performance at an acoustic radio broadcast. And the echo in this is sung by the translator that was assigned to Frank Black for this festival. It's a really fun version of the song, and enjoy.
Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
And tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
He wrote the book of the seven seals. Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Yeah. Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
And tell me God came down in the cool of the day, called Adam by his name, and he refused to answer. He was naked and ashamed. Tell me who's there riding?
John the Revelator.
Tell me who's there riding?
John the Revelator.
Tell me who's there riding?
John the Revelator.
And Frank, the Luke and Frank experience.
Ta-da. John the Revelator, and that's it is a cover, but I always thought it was a recent cover, and it turns out it's actually an old folk song, and so we can play that because no one has the rights to it anymore. We hope.
Public domain.
We played a song at the beginning from New York, and we're going to bookend it with a song from Saskatoon. And that actually, we could have tied that into the contest if we had been thinking about it.
We could have, but we're fools.
Damn fools. But yes, this last track is from the Pixies' warm-up tour in Saskatoon. They had a stop, and it was the best show I've ever seen. I had seen the Pixies. I was at a few of the other ones. I was at the Winnipeg show, the Regina show, and, of course, the New York show where I met Brian. And this one was particularly special because what they had done, all the shows, all the warm-up shows sold out in a matter of minutes, like 3 minutes, 4 minutes tops. for all those shows. And then what Saskatoon did, it's a venue that they could just, within the same place, they could change it to a different hall and double the capacity. So they did that, but they didn't announce it to anyone. So only the hardcore fans really found out about it. So there are people from all over the world converging on our sleepy little city here to see a show in what admittedly is one of the worst venues. But it didn't matter. Everyone was so excited to be there and be seeing the Pixies again and to actually, you know, see them on stage, the four of them together, that the atmosphere was just wild. It was just really, really intense. It completely blew away the other shows in Winnipeg and Regina, because, you know, you have people coming all the way from Australia, and there are people who actually came from New York to see it, because at that time there were no shows booked for New York. And this was the closing track before they started the encore. So it's a really, it was a hell of a way to go out. Just such a loud, bombastic show. And the interesting thing was they ended the song and all the house lights came on right away, but, you know, without the encore having started or whatever. And so the Pixies actually came back out for the encore and played with all the lights on. And it was sort of a weird, you know, you kind of felt closer to them somehow. You know, you're both in this sort of glitch and playing together, and you can see them, they can see you. I don't know. This pretty much is also the end of the podcast.
Yes, unfortunately, it's already time for us to say goodnight. But Dean was talking a little bit about his experience with a Pixies show, and we've been encouraging people from now to send in things for us to play on the podcast. And I'm going to formally invite you guys to start sending in stories about your Frank Black or Pixies experiences at shows. Email us, podcast@frankblack.net, and we'll let you pick a song from that show if there's a recording available. And we can hopefully put together something real nice here of different fans sharing their experiences of shows they've been to. But anyway, that's a discussion for another time. We are out of here. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
With Ben Cesario, author of The Doolittle Book.
Into the light. We're going to come back.